Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everybody, it's Brad here, and as you might know already, Bob and I are taking a little bit of a break for the holidays. We knew that you guys weren't going to want to take a break from listening, though, so we've turned things over for the month of December to our wonderful friend Zach Johnston, life editor and connoisseur of everything whiskey over at Up Rocks Magazine, and he is taking us through some of his favorite movies paired with his favorite people. Today, Zach is going to be talking about the absolute classic of action cinema, First Blood, with his friends Adam Todd Brown of the You Don't Even Like This Show podcast and Danger Van Gorder of the band Countless Thousands, and they'll be drinking Woodenville Ginja Cask. That is all ahead here on the Film and Whiskey Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Zachary Johnston. This is Zach's Whiskey Corner of the Film and Whiskey Podcast. I am extremely excited today because, one, we're talking about one of my and my dad's favorite films of all time, First Blood. Also, we have two guests and a great whiskey. Our guest today is Adam Todd Brown of the You Don't Even Like This Podcast Network and Danger Van Gorder of the band Countless Thousands.
Nailed it. Beautiful.
Who is here to help us try a Woodenville whiskey from Seattle. So we're up in the Pacific Northwest, the movie and the whiskey. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And there's the connection.
Yeah, there's
like, there is a theme. What is the connection between this whiskey and this movie? Now I get it.
The damp, dank Pacific Northwest.
Yes, yeah, I was super overthinking.
Did they barrel age this in a cave?
They might as well, because it's got some nice dank to it, that's for sure. But we'll get to the whiskey in a bit. First,
I'm getting to the whiskey right now. Y'all can talk. We can, like I said, we can talk about it later. But like, I've been looking at a very appealing photo that Adam sent me over. Like, I need to get into this bottle and enjoy it. And I am.
Drink your whiskey, Danger.
I'm drinking.
And let Zach do his podcast.
Yeah. Great whiskey, but guys, let's first talk a little bit about First Blood. Danger, let's start with you. What's your overall experience with this movie?
First Blood. Okay. Within 8 minutes, I believe I'd already texted Adam, I think I'm going to hate this movie. Because like right out the gate, dude is doing nothing and cops just start showing up and hassling him. And just like that random cruelty of just like, I don't like, I'm Brian Dennehy. I don't like how you look. Why are you here? You're walking in my town.
I don't understand why that would make you not like the movie, though. Like the cops are the villains. What's not to like about that?
Sure. I don't know. For context, my favorite movie that I've watched recently is Paddington 2, which is a modern classic, y'all. But yes, like,
cops are bastards in that too.
They are. I mean, they
are
certainly
they are.
It is actually a little bit about policing and police overreach in its own way. Paddington 2, again, modern classic. But yeah, I'm used to a little bit more subtlety, I guess, in my cinematic experiences. And just from the jump, Dennehy rolls up. I don't like your hair. You served in the armed forces. I'm suspicious of you, and I'm going to hassle you, and I'm going to drive you out of town. And oh my God, he turned around, an arrestable offense. And so would you,
America.
Yeah, just like, dude, what the hell? Like, I don't want to watch this guy suffer for literally no reason.
Oh, but you don't.
Well, I mean,
him make people suffer.
He also, I don't think he wanted to fall off that cliff.
Well, you have to do what you got to do. Sure. Yeah. You sort of, he probably,
sometimes you fall off a cliff, Danger.
Mm-hmm. I did say in that moment, like, hey, It's a cliff. It's a real cliffhanger.
You can't call yourself Danger and be anti falling off a cliff.
Adam, that's why it's a funny, dumb name.
Fine.
Yeah, Adam, I've definitely had some traumatic and injurious falls in my past. So, yeah,
We'll get there. Adam, what about you? What's your experience with First Blood?
Well, I mean, I've seen it a few times. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I am old enough that I saw First Blood in theaters because I had very irresponsible parents when it came to that. And they were not going to miss movies just because they had kids. So I saw like every slasher film in theaters when I was a kid. I saw Friday the 13th Part 2 when I was like 6.
Did you give them any reason to suspect that they shouldn't?
No, I was a kid. I was like, this is great.
Okay.
Of course I want to go see Halloween 2. Right.
I was a coward. My parents did that. I'd be like, get away from this place, never to return.
I was the same. I saw The Shining, Poltergeist, all those movies in the theater when I was far too young to have seen them.
Yeah, I should not. There's a whole generation of kids that should not have seen Poltergeist in theaters.
Yeah.
Admirals,
just watched on TV,
which is nuts.
Yeah. I remember having sleepovers with my cousins when I was 5, 6, and that one would be on during our sleepovers, like just as you do. But we're not here to talk about the masterpiece that is Poltergeist.
Yeah. First Blood, it's great. It's great. I like most of the Rambo movies. This isn't the best Rambo movie, but it's the first. And yeah, I mean, I like the metaphors it plays with. It's got a lot of Born in the USA energy, where it's like, it's obviously not pro cop, but it's also not pro government. And I appreciate that a whole lot. I don't like copaganda and I don't like propaganda. And I like how honest it is about how kids who were drafted into a war were treated when they returned from that war. Like, I understand, I wish there was more of an anti-war movement in this country, but I also understand how the anti-war movement in this country came out the other end of Vietnam looking really bad. Like, you don't spit on the kids, dummy, go spit on the president. Jesus. Ooh,
or the corpse of Henry Kissinger. Can we raise one to the passage of a real one?
Yeah.
One of the most destructive Americans of all time.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You sure held on for a while, but I'm glad that Carter at least gets to go. Cool.
Yeah. So, I definitely saw this at a drive-in theater on the big screen, but my dad had this on VHS and would watch it a lot. And coming from the res, between like 69 and 74, my dad very much experienced this movie. In the cop sense, where he would hitchhike around the West Coast, ran away from home when he was like 16. And in the indigenous community, in the res community, we call it walking down the street Indian, where you get just picked up by the cops. Mm. And so he added up all the time he spent in little bullshit jails, like the one in this film. And it came to 2 years of time he spent in jails just for walking down this road Indian.
Good Lord.
Because he had long hair, kind of,
strike that, one.
That AIM Indian vibe. And, he was in California in the Bay Area during Alcatraz and all that. And, this movie really spoke to him in that sense because he lived part of this movie in the sense that he was driven to county lines before and like the sheriff pulled out his pistol and say, you come back, I'm just going to shoot you.
That was actually the first thing I thought, because I haven't seen this movie in a long time, and that scene where they drive John Rambo to the edge of town and they're like, all right, don't come back. I was like, that's a Starlight Tour. That's what cops in Canada do to indigenous people.
Oh, yeah. And Minnesota, North Dakota. It trickles down.
And apparently,
you familiar with the Starlight Tour, Danger?
I think I just learned about a Starlight Tour.
Yeah. It's bad. Yeah. Bad times.
Bad times. Yeah. But I sort of, you know how it is, like when you're parent has some experience and you kind of take it half yes, half no, sort of like exaggerating how much is real or not. But I experienced the same thing. So I got, as a teen between like 12 and 15, I got into my my indigenous side a bit more and grew my hair long. And I remember being like 14 in my little podunk town in Washington, walking down the road, long hair, and cops would stop me and ask me if I needed a ride back to the res, even in the night. And so, you know, this shit is very, very real in that sense to this day. And even sort of putting a button on that when I moved back to the States, granted I'm in Kentucky, where they ethnically cleansed all the Indians 200 years ago. People still come up to me and be like, oh, you've got such high cheekbones. Are you an Indian? Or blah, blah, blah. And it's just sort of like, yeah, that's one reason I spent 20 years outside of this country.
Yeah.
But, so needless to say, long story short, too late, all that. This film has a deep resonance with me and my family. And watching it every time, I sort of pick up that little bit more that my dad would always talk about, and how just one shit don't change, but also I feel like this film is deeply misunderstood by the mainstream, because this is a very anti-war and anti-government movie. I mean, just jump right in. The very first scene, you know, Rambo's going to find his buddy who's a black guy, who died of cancer because of the illegal use of Agent Orange on our own troops.
Right.
That's how we are introduced to this film, where it's already like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a tough opening.
Yeah, it's just sort of thing where it really sets up the idea of, you know, whoever the powers that be, they're not the good guys.
Right. Yeah, and I appreciate that from this movie, because it could have, yeah, just as easily been sort of a pro-government thing and still been anti-authority because the cops suck. But I like that in the end, it's, no, everyone sucks.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the only not realistic thing about this is that it's happening to a white dude.
Yeah,
like, right. I feel like the cops probably would have helped him out a little more in real life, just because he's like, he's a pretty cut white dude. Was he wearing a hairpiece in this?
I think that is his ridiculously beautiful 80s hair.
Is it?
But it's hard to say. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know, because that Stallone's all smoke and mirrors. He's like 4 feet tall. But he always looks like he's the same height as everyone he's standing next to.
They got a lot of apple boxes in Washington, I guess.
Yeah,
they do.
His hair wasn't that offensive either. Like, they really stressed on it. Like, we're going to give you a shave. We're going to cut your hair. It's like, I mean, it's just a little messy in a way that would be stylish in about 8 years. You know, yeah. And that was like the one thing that was unconscionable. And I couldn't figure out, like, he's walking around that town with the backpack on, and he's got the army jacket, says Rambo, on the one side, and has an American flag on the other. And the sheriff is like, oh, you got to be careful wearing that flag around here. Like,
yeah, what?
What? The flag you have out in front of your sheriff's station, sir? Like, and he cooperates with literally every command other than don't turn around.
I don't know. He gave me a lot of like my cat type vibes in the beginning of the movie. Like when they're trying to fingerprint him and he's throwing his hand away. Like, that's my cat trying to get to my laptop whenever I sit down to work, because sometimes I show her the birds and the mice videos on YouTube. And so every time I sit, she's like, oh, well, that's what's coming. And let me force my way onto your lap.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, kitty, no. And she's just like, yes. Absolutely, yes, actually. And there was a lot of, like, I don't get why he turned around. I also question, where was he coming from? Couldn't he just go back there when he found out his friend was dead?
No, he right. Look, his friend and
I'm sure
his black family would have lived way on the outskirts of town, because, you know, it was
out on that lake.
Yeah, and I don't think they let the black families in the core of the community, vis-a-vis property values, not in my backyard.
I don't know if that argument holds up when they're living in a lake house, though.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe it's gross lake. You don't know what the water quality is like.
A pond house?
Yeah, there you go.
It's a reservoir house?
But yeah, so he's got to walk into town to get to any of the, like I said, he just wants to go to a restaurant. Dude wouldn't let him go to a restaurant.
Yeah. He wants a sandwich. That's all he wants. So, yeah, we,
just like Paddington.
Hershey's, just like Paddington. So, we basically already covered it. Gets arrested. He's taken to the police station, and we meet the rest of the cops that will become his fodder. Mr. Caruso, very young, fresh-faced Caruso.
I sure forgot he was in this.
Yeah, is the only cop who's like a real person. Whereas in like, dude, this guy's a veteran. He's obviously, you know, shaken up and has, you know, some sort of trauma. He uses different words. Shit goes AWOL when they try to shave him, which according to my dad was a real thing. Like they would shave you when you went in because you had to appear before the judge.
Standing up with a straight razor being held on either side.
Yeah. And so he thought it was
an electric shaver, guys. Like, yeah. Come on.
He always thought it was a thing. Like they just watched, they watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest too many times and thought that would be a good way to torture people.
I can see that.
So, you know, given the times, I can kind of see that being true, given how influential that movie was torturing people.
We glossed over something real quickly there. You mentioned a Caruso. We have a lot of really bad Carusos here in California. Which Caruso was this one? Is this like the
David Caruso?
Yeah, but like which one is it? Is that the CSI dude or is that the
guy? Okay. Yeah. And he had his shtick down immediately.
Right.
Like he is David Caruso AF in this.
Yeah.
Like that smile he'll give a person where he's like, I'm gonna cut your throat. But he's still and you can tell that's the message behind that smile.
Oh,
that's vintage David Caruso.
Yeah. So yeah, after the attempted shave, good old John Rambo goes into John Rambo mode for the first time, breaks out of the police station, jumps on a motorbike, the dirt bike. Of course, Brian Dennehy pursues, even after like the dumbass cop literally fires on a crowded street with a rifle after him. And this is where we see Dennehy isn't as crazy as that because he's like, what the fuck are you doing firing a rifle on Main Street? He's still, one thing I noticed this watch through, like Dennehy is okay at his job sometimes, but he just can't let it go. Where it's like, I think it's a really good sort of like backdoor into the modern day where people in power refuse to admit they're wrong, even when everything is telling you're wrong. And he's just like, I know I need to let this guy go, but I just can't do it.
Yeah.
He had probable cause at that point because dude, you know, was fleeing arrest. You just stole a motorcycle. That's like an actual crime.
And assaulting police officers.
But I don't know if that's like
property.
Reasonable rifle, you know, like let's get the long guns involved in this long haired gentleman.
Oh God, not yet. Yeah. That's why he chases him.
A shave after all.
Yeah.
Like, how do you, he must be made of Teflon and iron.
Yeah, we're being a little modest saying he broke out of that police station.
He broke his way out of that police station.
There were some tummies that got some boots.
That scene where he's running up the steps and the cop just opens the door as he gets to the top of the steps.
At the wrong time.
Also, it's Christmas time, so technically this is a Christmas movie.
I knew that was going to come up. I was like, Die Hard of Christmas? Yeah, this is also a Christmas movie. But they don't really talk about holiday cheer all that much in this one.
No.
I have a machine gun.
Some nice early 80s decorations around, though, which make all the cheer. But yeah, so we get a huge chase scene now, like a motorcycle into the woods, and it's just ridiculous. Thinking about the stunt driver driving through like the woods and just pastures and just insane places to take a police car.
A lot of fishtailing. Every time there was a corner rounded, you get a 1-2-3 count and then boom, police sedan comes out, does the big fishtail move. Like, all right, I got it under control. All right. Well, that ain't CGI. Nice.
Been able to get away from that cop a little easier.
Yeah, like he's got a dirt bike. He could have just went straight up to the woods, which he eventually does. And then sort of you get this, the film doesn't shift yet. It's still this sort of pursuit action movie where they bring in a helicopter, asshole with his long rifle accidentally falls out when Rambo throws the rock. It's the screen of the chopper. But it's sort of like that's the only death in the film. One death, accidental, not his fault.
Yeah, I had texted him at the end. I was like, did he kill anyone? He didn't kill anyone.
He's Batman.
He maims everybody, but he didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, and how did that helicopter pilot not just push that dude out when he was like, I'll kill you? It's like, oh, yeah?
Yeah, goodbye.
Then there's the misconduct, like the professional review, the IR is going to get involved.
But speaking of that, when the guy does fall out, that helicopter pilot takes no measures to like even see if he lived.
No, he's
just like, all right, peace. I'm out of here. He didn't even tell the cops that guy fell out of the helicopter.
The bloody rocks tell their own story.
Yeah. But this is where we get a sort of like shift. So like we get in the second act of the film. And this is a great shift because this film after this becomes straight up a slasher movie, literally with lightning strikes providing light in a dark rainforest as Rambo maims every motherfucker chasing him. And it's great.
Yeah.
This incentivizes the continued pursuit.
And it should be like, he gets to a point where, he's set up all these booby traps and et cetera. And he gets on Dennehy at the end with his knife on his throat. And it's so clear that he has lost. And all he has to do is let him walk away. And Dennehy can't let it go. He calls in the National Guard.
For one dude.
Yes. Well, and the National Guard makes itself way available. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Come out with M's. Maybe I'm getting ahead of things a little bit, but they send a truck with a goddamn M60 machine gun. It's like, that's one truck in a convoy of four trucks. He just be like, oh, I'm going to pick this one at the end. Yeah. I'll just jump in there. Hey, friend, what are you carrying? Oh, like the biggest machine gun made by the army. Okay, I have it. Please leave this truck. It's like, I don't know what's in those other three trucks. Did they have like napalm and like grenades and nuclear weapons? For one dude,
I get that he doesn't intentionally kill people, but that truck driver he pushed out definitely died of a concussion in his sleep that night. Like,
oh yeah,
he hit the ground.
He jogged it off. How many people? Okay, look,
we talked dirt on it.
We talked about falls earlier. I've had exactly that. Not exactly.
Fell from a helicopter while shooting at a
moment. No, nor did I fall out of a moving truck when a commando appeared on the passenger side unexpectedly.
So what was it that you're comparing that to, Danger?
I fell and landed on my noggin. And I
fell off a bicycle, if I'm not mistaken.
I did fall off a bicycle, and I have no memory of the event. I did not jog.
I do, and it was a lot like Rambo.
Yes. Visit me and never mention it until now.
Yeah, Brian Dennehy was chasing you.
Yeah, I was going to say, except Brian Dennehy was just looming over you.
I told my wife at one point, I was like, dude, young Brian Dennehy can kind of get it. He's got a very...
Was this young Brian Dennehy?
It was younger Brian
Younger,
Dennehy.
Yeah. Relatively, yeah. Maybe.
How old is Brian Dennehy dead? He's 150.
Yeah, or one out for a real one.
Okay.
Yeah, he's long past. But yeah, so we get a sort of shift at the midpoint here where it kind of becomes a comedy of errors when the National Guard comes in because they don't want to hike. They're all out of shape. They're like literally, no joke, playing with a bazooka.
These are weekend warriors.
Yeah.
In this film. I don't want to cast aspersions on the present day National Guard. But the people,
why not?
But I, because you know what? Because like I, during the George Floyd protests, I felt safer near the National Guard than I did my local police, the National Guard were just like, we're just going to maintain a presence. We're not doing anything. Whereas the cops are like, I'm looking for someone to make trouble.
Until they four dead in Ohio, you.
Yeah.
Until they four dead in Ohio.
Yeah. But the National Guard is just the greatest. So you get this sort of like comedic relief after the slasher movie. And basically the film just becomes a race to the end for this. You know, Rambo escapes through some tunnels, through some rats, and comes out the other end.
Sure kills some of those rats, like while they were filming. Like, I don't remember looking for the no animals were harmed in the making of this film. sort of tag at the end, but it, like, right. he brought, like, I see a little rat tail moving. He right. grabs one with his entire fist and ejects it from the stratosphere. And I'm like, oh, that rat's clearly dead.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a rat.
I'm sorry, Remy. I have empathy for all living creatures, big or small, squeaky or.
I throw a lot of rats. Yeah.
Yeah. Rats can go. That's fine.
But basically,
they were in that cave. They weren't doing anything. They were just being rats in a cave.
I love people.
Despite all your rage, they're still just rats in that cave.
Yeah. Fist fighting the rats. I love
it. I know, right? Yeah. Oh, man. But basically he escapes through tunnels and then he's like, I'm going to take the fight to him because he's not stopping.
He also has really good torch discipline in that scene. I noticed there's a couple of slips, couple of falls. He manages to keep that lit torch while his body is submerged in the water. He's like, no, got to keep this torch above the water. Boy, I'm actually kind of a genius at that. It's good. Would have been the Olympics for keeping that torch lit.
Yeah. What's crazy, this takes such a long time that Troutman, who's his colonel in the Green Berets, and Dennehy have time to sit down at a bar and share a drink.
Have a conversation. Talk anymore.
And have a whole conversation about, how the U.S. government is horrible to veterans and all this is bullshit. And that they're in a no-win situation. So what are they even fucking doing? And do you think for a second, Dennehy's character is going to be like, yeah, okay, I'll tap out. This is over. And he's sitting there. He goes back to his office and he's sitting at his desk, sort of like, doors shut. You see his medals from Korea behind him, his Purple Heart starred.
I missed that. Glad you pointed
that. Yeah, you think for a second maybe he is just going to let it go. But then Rambo shows up. all aspersions to Dennehy letting it go are literally blown away. And you sort of get this big climactic, invasion of the town scene where he blows up the gas station and the gun shop and invades the...
shooter situation.
Yeah, he invades the police station, still only going after Dennehy.
And that ammunition shop, he really lays waste to American commerce vis-a-vis selling guns.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the kind of commerce we need. Fine.
Yeah. Look, I live in Burbank. They have a lot of gun shops, but some of those gun shops are next to a really good empanada shop. I'm just worried about collateral empanadas.
Mm.
Indeed. And kind of what ties the film together is, at the very end, when Troutman comes in to sort of bring him out of the police station, Stallone gives a speech that he wrote, which was based off a letter he got from a veteran. Because he did a lot of veteran work back in those days. That was a true story, evidently, that this veteran has sent him, and he adapted that story and put it in the film to be sort of to show the trauma he really was living through. Because he had just got back from Vietnam. He was a POW, and all this stuff happened. And, there was no outlet for that stuff. And he felt, according to Sloan, felt that those are the stories that need to be told so people have more empathy for, like Adam said, the fucking kids coming home from this nightmare.
Yeah.
And, Troutman, of course, kind of understands and gives him a hug, and they walk out, and, he's arrested, and roll credits and cheesy 80s music.
Oh, my God. That song
over the credits. Woof.
I got 15 seconds and I'm on my exercise bicycle and watching the movie in the garage. I got 15 seconds and I'm like, I have to share this with my wife. This is insane. And bring back in touch. She's like, this guy singing just sounds like what Patton Oswalt sounds like when he's singing something silly. Like his
American pride,
but not so proud voice. Like that's that singer at the end of Rambo.
I would not at all surprised if Sylvester Stallone wrote that song.
or Frank.
Yeah,
it might be M. Night Shyamalan's niece wrote the closing single to the hit film Old. So, nepotism is a real problem here in Hollywood.
It's funny because this film sort of like people hated the end of this film because he cried and told that story.
That's what made the movie for me. Like Right? Out, like, it's just this parade of shit that this guy goes through merely for existing. Yeah. And he doesn't really say much other than, I didn't do anything. I didn't
drew first blood.
Yeah, they drew first blood. I didn't drew first blood. And then at the end, it's like, okay, well, he actually has a lot of nuanced things to say about the horrible state of affairs. It's like, yeah, this is really kind of turned things around for me, because it wasn't about bloodshed. It's just like, fucking leave this guy alone. Get him some resources.
Like, get him not, a sandwich. Like, literally, get him a sandwich.
Like, if he's like doing the kitty cat press, like, I don't want to take my fingerprints and I don't know how to do it. And I don't want to let you do it because I'm a little cutie cat. Look at my beautiful whiskers. Like, that's all right. I think there's probably some neurodiversity to John Rambo and his character. Maybe if he got a little bit of, look, I'm just saying, as someone that's on the spectrum, tiny bit, you know, we believe in neurodiversity. It's a real thing. And our veterans are certainly, as a population of people, there's going to be some neurodiversity there. And yeah, he don't talk a whole lot. And he does behave like a kitty cat in some ways. So maybe there's some neurodiversity. Maybe we can get in some resources that are appropriate for his needs. Then he wouldn't go and, you know, blow up ammo shops in the center of town and you know.
Okay, but did neither of you laugh a little bit when he was delivering that speech at the end?
No.
Like when he's like, I can't find your legs. I was like, that's a funny line.
It depends on my mood, but the way he delivers it is kind of funny.
Already discussed my deep empathy for even rats.
There's a part where Troutman shoots him a look when he's given that, where he's just like, fuck are you talking about, kid?
Yeah.
He's talking about missing legs.
Yeah, but
I can't find your legs.
Yeah.
Did he say that to the guy?
Troutman definitely.
I can't find your legs.
Troutman definitely has a, like, you need to man up, bitch, look.
Yeah.
Like,
chill out, dude.
Yeah.
If someone's legs are missing, I will pardon anyone's reaction to it outside of, like, removing their own legs, you know?
Yeah,
like if you discover that a leg is gone and then discover a second leg is gone, you're bound to react in unpredictable ways.
Very true. Very.
And that must stick with you.
It's a movie. A long danger. Time. It's a movie.
Oh, is it a fiction? And yet it reveals truths of our own selves. It never happened. And yet it rings in the souls of each of us who behold it. Cinema is a machine that generates empathy.
I'm going to find your legs.
So this film was a huge hit, by the way. Like, the critics didn't really love it, but this movie made bank. It was like the highest grossing, one of the highest grossing films of the year internationally. It was like the highest grossing American film in China for decades.
Huh. Because it criticized the American hegemony.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like a huge production, like, beforehand, like, everybody on earth from that era you can think of was going to play John Rambo, all the way back to fucking Paul Newman and Gene Hackman and those guys.
That's a different direction with each of those.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the sort of
thing. I didn't do nothing except this, make this delicious salad dressing.
Yeah. But it was one of those movies that was in the ether for a long time. By the time it got to Stallone, he, of course, you know, altered a little bit here and there. Mostly by taking out the dialogue, because evidently there was a 3-hour cut of this film that was the original cut, because it was going to be this big, you know, Vietnam epic, like Deer Hunter and Coming Home and all that. And Stallone hated it so much and thought it was so embarrassing, he got approval to cut it down to the 90-odd minute version that it was actually released by just cutting out most of his dialogue.
What if I just make my character real shy?
Well, that's right. What? I'm going to be honest, that's what makes this one of Stallone's best movies, is he barely talks. Because he is distracting when he talks sometimes.
Yes, he really is. And 93 minutes.
He's a good actor when he wants to be. Like, the speech at the end, like, I know you got your chuckles and your chortles. I really enjoyed it. It reminded me of, like, oh, yeah, he's a good actor. Like, Creed? He's great.
He's
great. But it's sort of a clean 93 minutes, probably 86 without that song at the end. But, you know, it's, I kind of miss that as well, where it's like, yeah, there's a message, there's action, there's, you know, there's yucks, and it's 90 minutes long. Like, you're in, you're out, done.
But it doesn't, like, the climax of the movie is not the explosions. Like, I've never seen any Rambo thing ever. I know him as a character. I name check him in one of my songs. Like it's an, he's an American institution of just like, he is a soldier. He is vengeance. But I had not seen anything. And so I was very surprised when at the end, first time viewer, oh, the climax is actually him connecting to an emotional state and like sharing that with not only like a father figure, but like the audience. And like, this is really ringing true for me. Cause me saying, I think I'm going to hate this movie was just because I don't like seeing people suffer for no reason. That's not like super fun. And for literally no reason. The Apple Plus like little blurby dude that talks about the film literally says, you know, a Vietnam vet comes back and then starts getting harassed by the local police for no reason.
Right.
I don't love that. No.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The speech at the end, the speech at the end is a lot like if at the end of Halloween, someone just sat Michael Myers down and was like, "What's going on, buddy? Just tell us. Just tell it." And he just starts blubbering. Because up to that point, you're right. It's like such a slasher film. Like he's just wrecking people in that in those woods.
Myers never is like, "I didn't do anything. Leave me alone. I'm just a, I'm just the son of this horrible woman." And the and
now yeah, I'm but I'm saying it would be cool if Michael Myers
it would
did
be,
that.
Yeah, it would
it's
be
not Mike. Good. You can't call him Mike Myers. Stop it.
I'm look. Mike's got to look out for him.
His Christian name is Michael.
Yeah. Have some respect.
So is mine, but I go by it.
So, you guys ready to taste some whiskey?
I mean, I'm gonna keep doing
finally
that.
Finally, ready to taste this whiskey.
So, one of the things I love about this film as well, for me, is just watching it. I get so nostalgic about just the way it looks, the mountains, the dampness of it. I mean, it looks like literally the town I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. And so that I will gladly admit creates a lot of nostalgia for me with this movie. This whiskey, Woodinville whiskey, is made just north of Seattle in the same area, basically. And, it's farm to glass. So, the grains that are in this, the corn, rye, barley, wheat are grown in Washington State. The whiskey's distilled in Washington, just north of Seattle.
That would be as opposed, like if you say farm to glass, how is that compared to like your heavy machinery, like your Jim Beams and Johnny Walker?
So a lot of mainstream bourbons are commodity grains. So they're pulling in grains, they're pulling in like wheat from North Dakota, they're pulling in rye from Northern Germany, they're pulling in corn from wherever they can get it.
So a lot more transportation involved before it actually gets in a pot still.
The corn comes from Bakersfield.
Ooh, there you go. No, we there you can't. Go. No.
Nice.
With a K.
With a sick baseline. So in this case, grain glass means they have a single farm source that is local through the distillery that they use for their grains. In this case, so we're drinking the Woodinville ginger cask straight bourbon, and ginger casks are Portuguese barrels where they take sour cherries to make a sour cherry liqueur called ginger. And so they finished their 4 or 5 year old bourbon in these casks to add a little extra layer of taste and flavor.
Now, so, are we certain we're pronouncing it right?
Ginger?
Genuine question. Cause like I'd been, there's some guy that there's like a UFC fighter who spells his name. Oh, no, wait, no, sorry. That's an R. Never mind. Yeah. I'm just saying Portuguese, those consonants, they'll trip you up.
Oh yeah. They'll catch up with you. But yeah, I go by the label G-I-N-J-A, ginger. It's keep it easy. What I like about
Portuguese
this
Portuguese and their consonants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good sausage though.
Great. Without getting too deep into the weeds, like what I like about this whiskey is how fruity it is on the nose. Like you do get those dark berries. You do get still the vanilla, the caramel, the bourbon.
Now we should mention this is a special bottle that's only available at the distillery. And it's a really exciting for, you know, us actually in this podcast, enjoying this beautiful dram. But yeah, it is real fruity for a whiskey.
Yeah.
And it's got that sort of amaretto sour thing on the nose.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, amaretto for sure. That's that sort of nuttiness. What about on the taste? What are you guys getting?
What do you got, Danger? Here's the thing. I'm not... That's kind of why I wanted Danger. Yeah. You know, he's like the whiskey connoisseur my life.
I really, Zach, I've been following you for a while. And every once in a while, I'm like, I got to try something new. I got to try something different. And I have $65.
Nice.
And then it turns out that the things that I want to get are not available because you have this insane life where you get to go to the Laphroaig distillery whenever you want and just like all this crazy shit. Either way, like it's a source of inspiration. But yeah, like, I don't know, like, on the palate, I get a lot of that sort of darker cherry, the kind of dark cherry that I once had a terrifying anaphylactic reaction to that like closed in my throat. I mean, it's a nice way to enjoy a flavor without the fear.
Danger's going to die.
Of getting strength. I mean, it's not impossible, but I'm going to really be wise and careful. There's a tiny bit of like a medicinal quality to like a Vicks honey herb type. Yeah. Like this reminds me of being really, really sick, but starting to get over it because you have that. That's when you taste the medicines that you keep for those, you know, worst and most rainy days.
Yeah, there's definitely a herbal bite for sure. That's
thank you. That's much better. I'm sure they'd rather say herbal bite than, you know, it tastes like being sick, which.
Yeah, I did not get that.
No, but like cherries, honey. Yeah. Amaretto sour. It's not like, I don't know, like my favorite whiskeys are all like the Octomores, like the crazy.
Oh, so you're a meathead.
Bastard. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the crazy shit. Which yeah, apparently they're wild. Not going to make anymore. Thanks a lot, Brocoletic. You're the best distiller in the world. I look forward to what you replace with that.
I had a bottle of
7.1 that I made last like 2 years, but sadly, look, if you know, I'm just saying. Well,
now I know where to send all my peated samples.
Yes, please.
Because I have all the 13s here and the 12s, I think.
Yeah, I look, I'm the kind of guy that, like, on my birthday, I'll go to Seven Grand, which my wife and I, for our first date, we were supposed to meet at Seven Grand, and I happened to be wearing shorts at that moment because I used to work outside, show up at the door of Seven Grand, they're like, no shorts, skedaddle. I'm like, oh, I'm never coming back to Seven Grand ever again. Seven Grand, downtown LA, the best whiskey bar in California, which I know now because eventually, you know, 5 years on, I let sort of bygones be bygones, be like, all right, as a healing exercise, I'm going to go to this bar and experience it. It's like, oh, no, this is my favorite bar that I've ever been in my life. I get why they have a dress code.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, also, Adam, like, to these places to get a $70 pour of an Octomore. Like, I'm going to try it this time.
Yeah. But Adam, this is why I wanted to do this with you. Is I think with a lot of this whiskey stuff, it's very easy to get very far, but just gently up our own asses about it. You know what I mean? And go a little too deep.
My own ass.
But what do you think, man? Like, as you know, someone, I mean, just as a past whiskey fan, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's good. It's like, it's, I'm not a big straight alcohol drinker. I usually need a mixer. Fair enough. And this is tasting straight.
It is drinkable. Yeah. We're drinking it right now out of, some little, steel shot glasses.
That the Woodinville PR guy gave me.
Thanks, Woodinville PR guy. Very nice. No ice, no nothing. Like, look,
this like normally isn't my thing, and I like this a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a whiskey drinker because I like these things to take a lot of time because as a very stingy person, I have to really make my drinks last. Right. Sorry. As someone that doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of income, I have two kids. So you really got to sort of draw these things out for an optimal experience. He had sent me a picture of this and the bourbon. He's like, what do you think of Woodinville? I'm like, dude, Woodinville is a great brand. They've got a killer rye. That's the thing that I'm most familiar with is in their lineup. But this is a whole other animal. Straight bourbon whiskey finished in Portuguese ginjinha. I know I'm saying that wrong. Casks. magic proof.
But that's just it. Like with this, you know, drink it however you want. You know, pour this over some rocks, throw in a lime twist. I would actually use this in an old fashioned. You know, add a little cherry to it, a little cherry on cherry, a little orange.
Let that
fruit pop a little bit. Just in the fact that it's also 95 proof, so it's not gonna like pull you over like a high proof whiskey will.
You would describe this as not being high proof?
95? No, not really.
No?
I'd say it's getting awesome. Towards it, but generally speaking, broad brush stroke, 80 to 99 is sort of the lower proof. 100 is bottled and bombed, and anything above that is high
proof. Got it. Okay. All right.
So this is on the lower, this is a higher side of lower end. That makes sense. But what I love about this is just, it's so approachable. Like I said, you get a lot of flavor notes and it's not burning you out. It's not overpowering. It's just a nice, easygoing example of what wooden bill can do.
I have a lot of friends that like I'm a chronic sharer. Like I love this niche thing. Like I really like understanding whiskey and like my daughter's like, I want to smell the whiskey. I'm like, okay, honey, you can't taste it. Daddy likes whiskey a lot. I'm like, thank you, baby. And I want to share it with people, but like whiskey, it's still an acquired taste. Like it is aggressive. For sure. My first whiskey was goddamn Laphroaig 10, which was a very bad idea. Because it is a bog monster.
You got to build up to that.
In my right. My first whiskey, Black Velvet.
Were you stealing that out of your grandmother's cabinet?
I mean, probably. I was too drunk to remember.
My grandmother drank Black Velvet and Pepsi.
Yeah.
She stopped drinking Coke because of New Coke. She's like, fuck Coca-Cola. They changed the recipe. Never going back. I'm a Pepsi woman now. And she stuck with Pepsi for the rest of her life.
Well done. Pepsi won the war.
Pepsi's gross.
Whatever. Well, Cola's
kind of with Canadian Rye makes better, I guess.
This is something that I would gladly pour for like my wife or, you know, my friend Matt, like people who don't really, they haven't steeped themselves in all of the nuance of whiskey. And they're like, it just tastes like burning. Like, if you want something a little bit more gentle, like this is probably where I would start people.
Yeah, no, I definitely recognize this as a good whiskey. Like,
right.
Hell yeah.
I've had bad whiskey before.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, this is highly drinkable. Like, I could just swallow this. Like, I could drink this as a shot right now, but I've been sipping it. But
yeah,
I can also probably knock down 3 or 4 shots of this in rapid succession. And
it's easy going, that's for sure.
Now, this leads me to another question, though, because I've got a friend, my friend that introduced me to whiskey has a bottle at his house that he keeps as a challenge bottle of like he and I like to trade, like, oh, I've try this one, you know, it's have a lot of fun. And he poured this one to me, here, what do you think? And I basically like, this is genuinely bad. What is this? And he's like, okay, good. I'm glad you think that. And it was a whole separate conversation of why he keeps a bottle of bad whiskey. But, and being in the position you're in, Zachary, I imagine you've probably got at least one or two that you recall of being actually like bad, but I don't expect you to identify them here on the air out of, you know, respect for your craft. I'm just saying you've definitely encountered how many bad whiskeys in your time on the planet?
It's lower than you would think, because there's poor quality and then there's faulty. And like poor quality, cheap sort of commodity whiskey's fine because that's what it is. But like then
purpose driven whiskey.
Yeah. Old Crow or, you know, should be White Label or JTS Brown, you know, all those $10 bottles. That's different. That's just cheap. Then there's faulty whiskey or faulty rum or faulty wine, beer, whatever, which isn't quite made correctly. So because of the craft scene, you have people rushing things out. You have people that don't exactly know what the hell they're doing. And so they are making a product that is dangerous, but they're making a product that isn't quite there. So it's sort of, you know, it's just, you know, the flavors are too chemically and too oily.
This makes it so much more sad because now there's an earnestness behind this story. It's not just like, well, We had big whiskey. We put shit out there to the plebes because they don't know any better. Like, this is actually like, hi, my name is Austin, and I've spent the last 3 years trying to figure this out. I hope you like this because I sold my car to make it.
Exactly. And then you're going to be like,
no, not bad news. Oh, that's
yeah. And so, like, when we're judging, for instance, there'll always be some stuff that's eliminated, of course, because you're tasting so much. You know, they, like, for instance, in San Francisco World Spirits Competition, they get 6,000 spirits entries. And, you know, just mathematically, some of them are going to be faulty. And so, you know, they don't publish what's eliminated, but we give feedback to those distillers and blenders, bottlers, to tell them, you know, where they've gone wrong and how they can fix it. So it is still supportive in that. But like you said, you know, it's somebody, that's what's always so devastating about it, because it's somebody who's probably put in 5 years of their life, if it's whiskey, because it takes that long, or maybe 2 years. And all this money, they probably maxed out all their credit cards and their mom's credit cards. And, you know, and then they spent $500 just to get this whiskey to a competition. And they're like, well, you know, need to start over. But that's,
I can't imagine there's a lot of coffee of stills actually still in circulation that can just be bought. And like, all right. Yeah, there's made in Scotland in 1865.
And that's the whole thing as well. Like, there's also, you know, it's like any industry in the world where, you know, there's also the insanely rich people who come into stupid amount of money and this is their side project, but nobody ever introduced them to someone who has taste. Their whiskey is bullshit, or their gin is bullshit, or what have you, because there's nobody there to be, you know, they're surrounded by sycophants. So there's nobody there to be like, no, this is bullshit. This is what you need to do, because they're just not operating in that world. They think, oh, this is an easy commodity. This is an easy win. You know, the bourbon or the whiskey industry is booming, blah, blah, blah. We can, you know, make some fast cash. Like, if you do it right, maybe.
But, have you ever tried to make your own whiskey?
I have not distilled. Well, I have distilled with some friends, but fermentation, you're just making beer, not hops. Distillation, you know, you're boiling it off to make the steam that becomes the alcohol, making sure it will eat it all. And then, you know, aging. So yes, but only as a hobby. It's not like the real. The real science is in the fermentation and the distillation, and the alchemy is in the aging and blending.
How about this? My wife got me a make your own whiskey kit last year for Christmas. And it was just like, okay, here's your botanicals, and then here's the wood chips. Get some Everclear, put the wood chips in the put the wood chips in. Like, let it leach out, mass. It's called machination. I don't know how to,
maturation. Like, yeah.
Thank you. And then leaches these flavors out, and then you filter it, and then you bottle it, and boom, you've got your own homemade whiskey that used to be Everclear, and now it's this other thing. And I've made that, and I've enjoyed, like, I've made 4 bad ones, and one that I've really enjoyed. That's like a vanilla base, like a vanilla bean, but. It sounds like you would not describe that as whiskey.
Well, by law, bourbon and rye has to touch new American oak. It doesn't matter how much time, it has to be a container. It doesn't have to be a barrel, it can be a box. But it to be called bourbon or rye, it has to touch new American oak for 1 second in a container. So you could literally pour moonshine into a barrel, pour it out into a bottle and call it bourbon. For whiskey in general, like, it doesn't even have to be aged. I mean, White Dog is on aged whiskey, right? Yep. So it just depends what you want. I mean, those home kits are,
Cool.
You know? They're fun. Because you can play around with flavors and sort of get into things. And anything that gets you into, you know, the world of whiskey, what's wrong with that? You know, especially when you're playing with your own flavors, you're building your own palate. And you're taking some ownership over it, which is going to give you, you know, added value as you go find things that you want to seek out on the whiskey aisle. But that all aside, what are your guys' final thoughts on First Blood? Adam, go.
I mean, it holds up. It's still a very fun movie. I think you're right to describe it as kind of a slasher movie. It's got like it feels like a few different movies in one.
Yeah.
And overall, I very much stand behind the message the movie is trying to deliver, because that's a real thing. Like,
yeah,
whether you support wars or not, like, you have to admit the way veterans in this country are treated is pretty abhorrent still. Like, yeah, it's not like, yeah, that has improved that much. And it's kind of a travesty. It is a travesty that veterans are treated the way they are, but we're also expected to support the troops.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, like, you support the troops. How about that? Yeah. How about you support them? It's not my job to support the troops. Well, and it's like, and I appreciate that even in 1982, we were getting that message out. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Springsteen wrote Born in the USA because of this movie.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, it predates that song by 2 years. So he had time.
Absolutely. Danger?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough swallow, I think, for the uninitiated and modern audiences, because it really is just a steady stream of shit that this guy has to endure. But that said, like, there's very much a point. Like, I guess, like, I had in my head gone in thinking it would be, I don't know, like some of these 80s bonehead movies where, like, at the end, like, he just kicks ass and that he's triumphant and that he looks at the camera, flicks his cigarette, on to the next chapter. John Rambo will return in Rambo 2, First Blood, the second part. This is not that. This is a lot more. I mean, it has a message to share. There's a lot of explosions to get through eventually. Cool. We love explosions. There's a little bit of rat abuse to get through, you know?
Okay. Being a real woke moralist right now.
Yeah, real woke moralist. Your next album, very exciting. But like, just like seeing a cop show up, like, hey, you're a veteran. Like, I guess, like, nowadays, our support, like, Blue Lives Matter, that, like, that is woven into support the troops in such a way that, like, if you have a gun and are expected to have some sort of policing action in the state, then, like, carte blanche, like, you at, like, socially, like, we as Americans need to support. But, like, clearly, like, I've got friends who, you know, served in Afghanistan, and they do not have an easy time at the VA. Like, this is not a problem that has been resolved at all. You know, when people come back from Vietnam, had it that much worse, because not only, you know, was the care after the fact basically non-existent, but there was also the social pushback of, like, people going, like, hey, maybe that war that we sent them to was kind of bullshit. You know, like, people taking their anger out, their anger towards Kissinger and putting it more towards the actual individual soldier, when really they needed to be way more angry at Henry Kissinger, who's dead, and fuck that guy.
But here's the thing. That's the whole point of the movie.
Yeah, and
look, that's what I love about it. Because, I've been saying for a couple of years now, like, I am over any action movie that makes the CIA look like heroes.
Yeah.
Like, full stop. I don't care what movie you're talking about. If it is a CIA agent doing cool stuff, fuck that movie. That is not what the CIA does. They do only uncool stuff. And I like that this is an action movie that tells the truth about the government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This, like, his whole thing at the end is, this is your war, not my war. You asked me. Yeah. I didn't ask you. Like,
It's a great line. And not to go too far off topic here, but, you know, Rambo First Blood Part 2, it's the CIA is the bad guy and Congress.
Yeah.
Like, they take and they stop that movie dead in the middle for Troutman to confront the CIA goon to be like, what the fuck are you doing here? Because that's why that movie is them trying not to give reparations to the Vietnamese. So they're trying to prove there are no POWs in the country, and they use Rambo as a sort of scapegoat. And, you know, that movie also way more subversive than people give it credit for. I mean, Rambo literally shoots a picture of Reagan with the M60 in that.
You have talked me into this movie.
Yeah.
And, and it is saying what, you know, what you're saying there, Adam. I mean, also, again, a little big last point about Rambo too, but you know, the movie starts with him doing hard labor in a U.S. prison because that's where a lot of vets ended up because of situations like this, where they were like, you know, like my old man walking down the road while Indian, you end up in jail.
But he starts
in America
on the street, as many of our veterans are, right? Just on the streets. And he winds up in prison because that's, you know, that's our state. We don't care for people. We just fucking incarcerate.
And sadly, it's not changed. In fact, it's probably gotten worse, if anything. To the point where I always thought this film should be remade with, you know, an Afghani vet or an Iraqi vet. I was thinking Adam Driver and Michael Shannon as Dennehy.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Adam Driver, but he was a Marine, right?
He's a Marine. Yeah. He was full on. But anyway, so yeah, like I mentioned before, I have a very, very deep space in this movie, in my soul. Part of it's nostalgia for just, you know, seeing what my home looked like when I was growing up in the 80s as a kid. Part of it is my old man who had a deep love of this film. But yeah, I think Velma and Whiskey Nation out there, you should definitely rewatch this movie because it has a very clear point that still needs to be made today about taking care of the people in this country who, whether you like the war or not, sacrifice their lives as young, basically fucking children, go through traumatic, horrible events, and then come home and still get shit on. And that's just something that's, to me, unconscionable.
If you, like also, me, went into this thinking that Rambo's just a caricature who blows shit up, and then, like, it's the 80s, so clearly it's going to be like, oh, I'm here to knock over Nicaragua because President Reagan told me to. Like, that's what I thought Rambo was going to be. But it's a lot more nuanced much more subversive than that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So, Adam, where can people find you?
Oh, you know, I do a bunch of podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Adam Todd Brown. That is Todd with one D. It's not a typo. And I host a podcast called You Don't Even Like This Show. I host a podcast called Conspiracy the Show. You Don't Even Like Sports. You can find them all wherever podcasts are. Just go look. Especially You Don't Even Like Sports and You Don't Even Like This Band. More people need to listen to those. They're some of the best stuff we do.
Absolutely. Great, great episodes up right now, too. And
thanks.
Danger, tell us about Countless Thousands, what you guys got going on.
Yeah, we are currently working on our new album called Woke Moralists. Let's see, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/countlessthousands, trying to, you know, make that so that we can actually produce the things we want without, you know, I don't know, I have two kids, and I don't know if anybody ever made this point on the podcast, but kids are expensive. So please come and support.
Say.
Yeah. If you're new to Countless Thousands and want to check us up, go to YouTube and look up us. Our version of Solidarity Forever is like, I don't know. I love it. I'm a big union. This is a union shirt I'm wearing. Love unions, you know, very pro union. Solidarity Forever is great. And then Laser Wolf is another really, really great place to start. That's Lazar Wolf, the awesome side character from Fiddler on the Roof. There's a whole thing to it.
And I mean, if you listen to the You Don't Even Like This Show podcast, the song that plays at the end.
Yes.
Is a Countless Thousands song called Gang Fight.
Recorded at Adam's request of like, hey man, that song you played at the show, like, that's dope, man. I need a theme song podcast. And here we are 10 years later. 10 years later, we got gray hairs. We got a beautiful kitty cat. Look at it. Mimi keeps jumping on the desk.
She sure does.
That's a beautiful cat. So, Adam, I'm hoping you're going to react the thumbprinting scene with the cat when we sign off. And then send me photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to shave it.
God, that did remind me of my cat. Would you just relax, John Rambo?
All right, everybody. So I'm Zachary Johnson. You can follow me at CTP Whiskey on Instagram or uprocks.com, where I write about whiskey. Film and Whiskey Nation, thank you for listening. We're going to be back next week with a little Dazed and Confused with some Texas whiskey. And then, we're going to keep on trucking across America. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Good on, y'all. Cheers.
Bye.